Welcome to the Insider World Building Podcast, the place where you can experience life in another dimension, told from the perspective of a visitor to that dimension. I'm Fox Keyes. That visitor is me. That dimension is called Dunaree. And I have lived here ever since I was tricked into passing through an interdimensional gateway shortly after my 14th birthday. Not only do I wish to share the story of how I survive in Dunaree, I hope my experiences and how I was taught to understand this world may help you build your own unique secondary world. This week, the 14-year-old me gets his first sight of the City of Bones. I talk about constructing buildings for your world, and the strange but true details the story of a haunted house. A haunted house that could not be sold. And of course, we're back to the sponsorship thing again. Ganhook was so impressed with my presentation the last time. Not that he would know how it should be presented anyway. But now he thinks it's a fantastic idea to sponsor. And, as he keeps reminding me, there are plenty of companies willing to sponsor this show. Why? I have no idea. This week's show is sponsored by Stay and Daughter, the makers of Stay-Ven Soap. Stay-Ven Soap? It's the best soap ever. Stay-Ven Soap is a living soap, which means it contains a live culture that can feast on dirt, no matter how deep that dirt is in your skin. Those are their words, not mine. It was written down on a piece of paper by Mr. Stay, I assume, or his daughter. Handed to Ganhook, and Ganhook handed to me and said, "Here, read this at the beginning of the show. Let everybody know how good this soap is." Well, I've tried the soap, but I'm not going to talk too much about it. My opinion is no opinion, really, because that would be bordering on a product review. And Ganhook has already kind of hinted that he wants me to do some product reviews, which could be fun, because some of the products I have tried here are pretty unbelievable, with unexpected results. But that will be for later episodes. Today, I'll just carry on. So, this week's episode is sponsored by Stay and Daughter, makers of Stay-Ven Soap, the best soap ever created. Now, let's move on to the show, and my first trip outside the fortress into the City of Bones. My first sight of the City of Bones happened so suddenly, I had no time to be nervous. The morning after I'd seen the property brochures, shortly after I awoke, Steincat arrived and said, "Let's take a walk outside." Shiny Top sighed with pleasure and said, "About time." Before I knew what was happening, I had Shiny Top in my hands and I was hurrying down the corridor after the cat. No great curtains parted to unveil the world. No trumpets sounded. No heralds cried, "Welcome to Dunaree." We just passed through the courtyard separating the tower from the main entrance, opened that main entrance, and stepped outside. And my perception of life changed forever. About 40 metres ahead was a great wall of white. The glare of sunlight off Bones made me squint, so it was a few moments before the wall organised itself into a line of buildings composed of bones. After seeing the brochures, I had expected the square to be surrounded by higgly-piggly bunches of bones of various shapes and sizes. Collapsed skeletons are not organised by any standards. Not supposed to be, anyway. Instead, the buildings surrounding the square were of uniform height. Yes, the large bones were higgly-piggly, but all the gaps between them were filled with man-made constructions. Nothing rose higher than 4 stories, which meant nobody could see across Ganhook's wall. Every door and every window and every building had curved frames, like warped ovals. Combined with the naturally beveled edges of the bones, this gave the street a wonderfully rhythmic feel. It should have been easy on my eyes, but the glare of the bones was making my head throb. Some of these buildings, the ones especially filling the gaps between the larger bones, were a mix of heavy timber beams and smaller bones laid like bricks. Beautiful cool green vegetation rose among the buildings and sprouted through cracks in some of the taller bones. The grey cobblestone street did little to absorb the glare. The square was pedestrianised, but down some of the side streets I saw three-wheeled vehicles zipping about, making a shocking whining sound that rose and fell like sirens. Although I was trapped in a hostile world, I had never felt so free. I felt a rush. I felt I could have hugged the first person who walked past, just because they were human. Apart from Ganhook and Shiny Top, who I still wasn't sure had been a human once, I had had no contact with a human being for over 4 weeks. Not that there were more than a handful of people out and about in this square so rarely. Mostly, the people looked like normal people, a fair mix of tall, short, round and skinny, while many wore plain pants and free-flowing waistline robes. A few had uniforms of dark grey with black buttons and tan boots. They behaved like people too, chatting, coughing, limping or rushing past, their faces red with stress. Some stared my way and pointed. An intense paranoia swamped me and set my heart throbbing like a drumbeat to summon those who weren't staring at me already to stare at me anyway. Shiny Top said, "It's nice to be out." I fought the urge to flee back into the compound. I said, "Everybody's staring at me." Shiny Top made a clicking sound, a sound I had never heard before, a happy sound. He said, "When you see it from the outside, Gandhook's compound is quite the place, isn't it?" I hissed again, "They're all staring at me." Steincat snorted and said, "Nobody is staring at you. Besides, if anyone was staring, they'd be staring at me. I'm much more important around here." Glancing back, I saw the exterior of Gandhook's compound for the first time and gasped. From the outside, the bone wall appeared twice as high and the upper fangs glimmered like they'd been polished. The entrance door appeared to have shrunken back into the wall. It was a small metal door, plain and inconspicuous. I had expected to see some grand portal, a statement of power. This was the opposite. And it was the tower that people were staring at, not me. I realised these people were visitors to the square, looking at the structure for the first time. And the stone structure loomed like a living thing. Now, I thought, that was a statement, a definite message of power that stood like a grey fist amid the bleached bones. I wondered if Ganhook was staring down from any of the dozen or so windows. I hoped he was. Organised chaos. That's how I would describe the square. Chaos, because nothing fitted snugly next to anything else, in the way that houses might pack along a street. Organised, because, somehow, the whole jumble of bones and windows and doors and roofs and paths all fitted together anyway. Here and there, people were drawing the compound. I remembered what Ganhook had said about this place being a tourist attraction. The people were dabbing long coloured pencils against wooden support pallets, obviously creating their own memories of the place. Watching them gave me a relatable anchor to focus on in the confusion. The urge to check out their work, to hopefully see it was worse than my drawing, seized me. But everything else demanded my attention too. It was like every stone, bone, window, door, person and wonky building was snatching at my mind with long, insistent fingers. Shiny Top said, "What do you think?" I realized I was gripping the staff so tightly around his neck, I'd have choked him if he was alive in the first place. And by now the glare was so bad I could barely see anything. I felt cruel and cheated that, now I was finally outside, I couldn't see much. Yes, I could smell it, that lovely smell I remember from the bottle. But I couldn't see anything. Hoping it might ease the pressure in my head, I focused on the greenery. It made little difference. I said, "I'm going blind." Steincat said, "Your eyes will adjust over time." She handed me a pair of dark glasses, weird leather-framed wraparounds. But I didn't know what kind of head they were supposed to wrap around, because they were way too big for me. I had to hold them up with both hands, which, in turn, only heightened my suspicion and paranoia that everybody was staring at me. And I still couldn't see anything. Panic seized me. "Help," I cried. "I can't see anything." From behind, I heard Steincat say, "Oh, I didn't expect this." Shiny Top replied, "We should get him back inside." And that was that. My first grand view of the City of Bones ended in a blur of colours and embarrassment. Once I was inside, my eyesight returned to normal within minutes. After promising to give me the dark glasses before we went out again the next day, Steincat actually apologised, which was a rare thing indeed. The room zero window had cleared too, and now it was tinted, so I spent the rest of the day looking out at that fascinating square and wondering what I was going to see the next day. That was how I was introduced to the City of Bones. No fanfare, no drama, no commentary. My two trusty guides, if I could call them that, simply guided me out the door and left my mind do the rest. Not that I saw much that morning. Had I left the compound at midday, the sun would have been higher and my eyes would have handled it. Once again, even if it had been an accidental slowness that morning, I was being introduced slowly to Dunre. And as crazy as it all was, everything that had occurred to me at Dunre up to that point had been a prelude, an intro, like the blurb on the back of a book that hinted at what was inside. Even Gantuk's fortress was partially based on a medieval Irish townhouse, deliberately so. I can't explain the full reason for this design right now. It's a bit of a creative secret. But it was partially designed in such a relatable way to act as a halfway house for travellers entering Dunre from Ireland. So, how do you introduce your world? How can you create a sense of awe to keep your audience awake at night thinking about your wonderful place? Build apprehension first. If you've ever visited some majestic building or place, you've never just gone there by accident without first knowing something about that place. What did you feel when you first saw it? Did it meet your expectations? Or did it disappoint? And under what conditions did you experience this place? My first sight of the City of Bones was an anticlimactic disappointment because I couldn't see it properly. This only challenged and fueled my imagination, made me long to see more of it. If you create the most marvellous city, and just drop your audience into it and go, "Look at this, look at that, look here, look there," they may get so overwhelmed they will draw back. You risk losing them. Besides, you have spent ages creating this wonderful place. If you release it all in one go, you'll have nothing left. It's not some grand one-off display. It must be designed to last. And, like any other wonder, it needs to keep revealing its secrets on a staged basis. And like it or not, this place isn't yours anymore. Creating a city, or any fictitious place, is a joint venture between you and your audience. They will never see exactly what you will see, no matter how richly detailed you describe it. But if you create a solid foundation, with buildings, roads, rivers and the like, and suggest the rest by hinting and by getting them to use all their senses, you will engage your audience more, and their imaginations will fill in the gaps. If you've always wanted to visit the pyramids, and you've gone to all the trouble of going to Egypt, you just won't stare at the pyramids for 10 minutes, take a few selfies, and head for the local falafel place for a meal and a few beers. No, you will want to explore more. You will seek out things that make the place personal to you, things that are not in any guidebook. This is what your audience will try to do as well, in your world. And if you've created the world correctly, that's exactly what they will do. If you will want to know what's around the next corner of the pyramids, likewise in your world building, if you drop a hint about what is around the next corner of your city, your audience will be happy to explore that place too. Not being able to see outside of Gantig's fortress created the desire within me to know what was there. I was only human, after all, and humans are nosy, curious creatures. The same thing happened when I went outside and failed to clearly see the City of Bones. It only fueled an intense desire to see more. And you can do that with your audience too. Build a framework, add some details, drop in some hints, and engage your senses. They'll thank you for it by happily exploring your world further. Now it's time for this episode's Strange But True, the City of Bones Supernatural Tour. For national security reasons, official tours of the City of Bones have been prohibited for over 200 years. This, however, doesn't stop the unofficial tours from thriving. Visitors want to see the city in a short, organized way, instead of wasting their time blundering about, trying to find the interesting sights. The supernatural city tours were the most popular. People love a good scare, and many of the city's spirit inhabitants, non-human spirits included, had little to say about who came searching for them, especially if the tour guide was accompanied by one of the more aggressive mediums, or even an exorcist. This all changed after the Sheikh tour disaster. Stam Sheikh operated the most aggressive supernatural tour, called Raising the Dead. This tour usually had a 4-week wait list, due to Sheikh's indiscriminate use of exorcists to, as he bragged, get all those old bones up and rattling. Sheikh's enterprise ceased abruptly one night during the abandoned avenues leg of his tour. As the name suggests, the abandoned avenues is a derelict section of the city due to the ancient unstable constructions there. It is also home to some of the more interesting spirits. Apparently, Sheikh's exorcists have been trying to raise the spirit of a notorious killer. Some say he was a relative of Sheikh's, when an entire bone temple collapsed and killed everybody. An accident? Nobody believed that. Rumours spread that the spirit world had finally intervened to stop these tours harassing them. A public inquiry returned a verdict of accidental death. Nobody believed this either. Truth was, even if the inquiry had decided Sheikh and his tourists had been murdered, the process of finding and convicting a murdering spirit would prove difficult and expensive. Besides, it was notoriously difficult to imprison a spirit. Special walls were required. Otherwise, they just pass right through them. So, the case was closed, relatives of the dead received compensation, and the city moved on. Except for the supernatural tours, of course, which immediately ceased. Not even the most insane tour guide was willing to challenge the spirit world again. The spirit world had sent a message. and everyone had listened. One tour, however, kept going. Sheik's last tour. Due to their violent end, Sheik and his group are fated to endlessly wander the city, retracing their final fateful steps. If you venture onto their route during a full moon, you may well see this column of moaning wretches trudging along. They have, quite literally, become the City of Bones' supernatural tour. Strange indeed, but very, very true. That's it for this episode of the Insider Worldbuilding Podcast. Join me next time when I describe my first introduction to the inhabitants of the City of Bones. I describe how I learned how to understand an otherworldly population and relate the strange but true story of how the City of Bones streets can be paved with gold. And please, if you know anyone who may be interested in world building or learning about another world, do tell them about this show. Oh, and just before I go, please don't forget. This episode is sponsored by Stay and Daughter, the makers of Stavend soap. Truly, the best soap ever created. Well, of course it would be, wouldn't it? Okay, goodbye for now. Or, as we say in Dunary, Dreyavik.
Well, the bridge, the end, it's all right. The edge of the ship, right? The world, right?
And the wash beetle, I'd be slipping, dealing again.
Just seriously. We were cherry thin.